Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and I'm really pleased to welcome Jessica Walliser back to the microphone. Jessica, with a degree in horticulture, frequent contributor to national and regional gardening magazines, will be telling us all we need to know about the insects in our gardens. And she's got a book out called Good Bug, Bad Bug. We'll be talking with you about that as well. And we'll also be visiting a little bit with Jim Packard. It's our winter membership drive. And, of course, I'm here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. The listener donations are really the foundation of our budget, and that's why we're asking for your gift right now. So make your pledge of support at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552. And, Jim Packard, what's our goal?
Our goal, Larry, is $9,000 for this program, and we have until 12:30 to raise that amount. Meeting the goal will help make the program possible in the months to come. Your contribution of $60, $120, any amount that you choose will help us get there. So make your pledge online at WPR.org or call us toll-free at 888-202-2552.
In just a minute, we'll be talking with Jessica Walliser about the good bugs and the bad bugs. And during this program, you're going to hear from a lot of interesting people over the course of the year, people like Jessica Walliser. And especially on Garden Talk, we have some wonderful guests every Friday. And I love to hear from you as well. You bring us some great questions and some great comments. So the programs like this are only possible with your support. So think about how much you enjoy the station, how much it enriches your life, and then make your contribution to support it. You can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. Let's make that $9,000 goal.
Larry, we know that people give to WPR to support the programs that they listen to, but as an added incentive for your good deed, today we have a special thank you gift this hour. Donate $120 or more, and you can receive the book Good Bug, Bad Bug. It's 25 bugs, which are pests in the garden, and another 14, which are beneficials in the garden. And we'll get into that with Jessica. But it's a $120 pledge, and go to WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
It's a beautiful book with lots of great photographs of the insects, identifying those insects and how you can deal with them organically, at least the bad ones, and how to promote those good bugs. So those are some of the things in the book. When you make your contribution of $120 or more, you can listen to WPR every day for years and you'll never get a bill, right? We don't put a meter outside your house, or we don't count how many minutes you use WPR and send a bill. Instead, we use the honor system. And so we're counting on you to voluntarily make a pledge to pay for the listening that you do. And you can do it at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. You decide how much Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you. This is a Garden Talk show. It's one of our most popular shows on Wisconsin Public Radio, I think. And we always look forward to the great support that we receive from our gardening listeners. So help us out now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552 with your pledge.
Giving just takes about 3 minutes of your time. About four things that we need from you: your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Credit cards, of course, do save us time and money, and we take Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover. So why not take those 3 minutes right now, give securely online at WPR.org, or give us a call at 888-202-2552.
And please do it right now, 1-800 or 1-888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org. We'll be talking by phone now with Jessica Walliser, author of Good Bug, Bad Bug, at Who's Who, What Do They Do, and How to Manage Them Organically. That's the subtitle for the book. Really pleased to have her back to be with us again. And certainly to answer your questions. And if you have a question for her, there's a bug that's kind of bugging you as in the garden. I hope you'll join in. Of course, this time of the year, there aren't Jessica Walliser with us by phone. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm great. You know, we don't have a lot of bugs bugging us right now in the garden. But
no, I don't imagine you do. but trust me, they'll be there in the spring.
They sure will. I want to give the number for people to join in. It's 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for Jessica. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. So that's how you get to us. Well, you probably have, Jessica. Now, where you're living in a little warmer climate than what we have.
A little bit, but not much. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
and we've actually had a pretty rough winter. So not compared to you guys, but pretty rough for us.
What about what are some things that we ought to be thinking about right this time of year when it comes to bugs?
Well, I think one of the primary things to be considering is that a lot of pest insects actually overwinter in the debris that's in our gardens. So if you had pest infestations, whether it was squash bugs or Colorado potato beetles or whatever in your vegetable or ornamental gardens, and you left a lot of the debris in there,
yeah,
cleaning that out in the spring, first thing, is very important.
Okay.
Because if there were adults or even nymphs that were overwintering in that, we need to get that out of the garden. And that's especially important in the vegetable garden. Not so much so in perennial beds and shrub beds, but definitely important in the vegetable garden.
Okay. So, and another good thing to do would be to get a hold of your book, because you'll get a head start on identifying those garden pests and also the beneficial ones. You've
exactly.
done a great job in the book.
Thanks. You know what? It was a pleasure to put this book together, and the reason why is because, you know, everywhere that I give a class and teach and lecture, and in fact, I was at the Green Bay Botanic Garden last year giving a lecture, which is up in your neck of the woods.
Right.
You know, everywhere that I go, before this book came out, somebody inevitably in the audience would ask a question: do you have a good reference guide for pests? That's just for the average Joe homeowner. You know, I don't want thousands and thousands of different species of slug. You know, I just want to know the basics. I want a picture of what they look like. I want a picture of what the damage. Is there any out there? And I kept having to say no. So when I found a publisher for this book, I was so excited because I thought, you know, this is what all these people are looking for. And I had a lot of input on putting the book together and deciding which insects would make the cut because we only had so many pages that we could fill. And so we picked the most common. We picked the 25 most common across North America insects that we're going to find, pest insects in the garden. And then we wanted to include beneficials because it's not fair to not include the good predatory insects and just have the bad guys in there because they play a very valuable role in our garden. So we have both of them in there.
Well, and it's a wonderful book. I love the photos are just great of the insects and the larvae and sometimes the eggs as well.
Yeah, and that's important. And, you know, a lot of times when people call and they, or I see them out at a lecture and they say, you know, I have this pest and they try to describe it to me. Well, you know, there's a lot of brown bugs out there with, you know, six legs and antenna and dots. I mean, it could be so many times hundreds of different insects. But when you have a good picture there to look at, you can make a more specific ID on them. And that's the first battle in battling any insect is getting a proper ID because you can try things and use products until you're blue in the face, but if you're not targeting them with the right product, you're not going to have a good rate of success, and that's wasting time and wasting money. So those good pictures are so very important, and because they look so different in different stages of their life.
Yeah.
You know, when they're nymphs, in the case of certain beneficial flies, what their larvae look like, you know, you never guess that they were the same species. So having all the different life stages in there is really critical as well.
Well, let's take some calls. Again, you can join in with your questions as we talk with Jessica Walliser, author of Good Bug, Bad Bug. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Roman in Wausau, we go to you now. Hi, Roman. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm traveling on my cell phone here right now, but I presume everything is coming through. I live in Wausau, and I've got a fireside delicious apple tree in my backyard. Limb ball is probably about 10 feet in diameter. It stands about 12 feet tall altogether, probably, the tree. I've had trouble, I guess, with these coddling moths laying their eggs on the apples, and I'm losing, a couple of bushels every year, more than I want to lose to these worms. And I've tried poisoning once, and I tried these traps with the vinegar and the banana peels and so on. But I'm wondering that this year, if I cover that tree, the bees do their job of pollinating. If I cover that whole thing with like a mesh cheesecloth or some kind of thing that maybe I could pick up at the hardware store, if that's an option, if the apples will thrive and if that'll do the job, what would be your suggestion on that, please?
Well, if you cover the whole tree, you got an awful lot of work, and you better have a big ladder if it's a 12-foot-tall tree. That it is possible, but usually we recommend those techniques for smaller fruit trees like a blueberry or a currant or a gooseberry. And actually, we don't say it's not cheesecloth that you would use. It's a product called floating row cover. And it's just basically a translucent fabric that is specifically for agricultural purposes. It lets light through. It lets water through. And that's what you can surround those plants with to protect them. But for an apple tree, I think that's probably a step that might be a little bit, I mean, that would be a really true last resort for me to cover the whole tree, because it blows off so easily, and you'd be out there, you know, every time you had even the slightest amount of wind, you know, readjusting it. So what I would suggest that you do instead, when you said you tried the traps, I got all excited because I thought I wanted to talk to you about how that worked, but then you said what kind of trap, and I don't think that that's an effective trap. I think for coddling moths, what you want to find are the pheromone traps. And pheromone, as most of us probably know, is the sex lure that almost all insects emit to attract a mate. And so what scientists have done is they've learned to isolate the pheromone lure for coddling moths, and then they put them in. It's kind of like a little triangular trap that you hang in the tree, and the males think there's a hot mama in there, and they fly into the trap, and they get stuck on the sticky surface in the bottom. So they're usually used on a commercial purpose just for monitoring population levels. But I think for a home gardener, if you would get, for that size tree, probably 3 or 4 pheromone traps, you would make a dent in the coddling moth population, because the males would not be there to mate with the females. That's one thing you can do. Another thing that's very important with them is cleaning up all that fallen fruit. When it falls down to the ground, immediately you have to clean it up and burn it, or throw it away in the garbage, because they overwinter and their populations increase in that fallen fruit. So that good cultural practice is very important. And also, if you really want to get specific and you really want to protect each individual fruit, when you thin, do you thin your apples?
We lost him. Not sure if he did. I bet he doesn't.
Okay. When you thin your apples, which you should do, you really should do, because it gets better quality fruit and they're healthier fruit. When you thin it down to 1 per spur, basically, is what you want to do, you can put just a brown paper bag over it. And they sell actually specific bags for it that don't get wet. You know, they don't disintegrate in the rain. And you put a bag over each apple, and they let light through, and then the apple will ripen in there, and it's very protected. In fact, in Japan, that's what a lot of organic farmers will do, and they will produce very high-quality, very large fruit that they can get a very good price for. Labor-intensive on a commercial basis, but for just an average
homeowner, for one tree,
something you could do.
Yeah, so, and it would be a lot of fun to experiment with it, too, I think.
Yeah.
I don't have an apple tree. I wish I had one, because that's one of the things I always thought, boy, that'd be fun to try.
Well, and you know what, Larry? If you're going to try one, if you're going to plant a new one, buy one that has bred in or natural resistance to disease and pests, because there are so many varieties of apples out there that you don't have to mess with any of this stuff with.
Yeah.
You know, especially the scabs and rusts and things that can happen. So many of them are resistant to that. So if you're going to make a choice to plant one, that's the most important information you should look for, in my mind.
Talking today with Jessica Walliser, author of Good Bug, Bad Bug, Who's Who, What They Do, and How to Manage Them Organically. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Jessica Walliser about what you need to know about the insects in your garden. She's the author of Good Bug, Bad Bug. And we're giving copies away as a premium for those who contribute $120 or more during this program. That number is 888-202-2552. To make your contribution, we'll send you a copy of her book, or go to WPR.org. You can do the same thing. Let's go to Robin in Madison next. Robin, hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Question. Japanese beetle traps. I live on the east side of Madison. All of us gardeners, we're in a pretty densely urban area, are affected by these Japanese beetles for the last 3 years or so. I've heard mixed reviews about using the beetle traps that you hang, and I do believe they do have pheromones that attract them in. I've heard that you could attract more to your garden if you hang these up, and if your neighbors aren't doing the same thing, then you'll attract them to their garden. What do you guys think about them?
I know Phil Pelletieri has said it'd be better to put them up in your neighbor's than on your own yard. But what do you think, Jessica?
I completely agree with that gentleman. Yeah, the thing about them is, yeah, you put that beetle trap up, and it actually attracts beetles from, they say, up to a half a mile away. So you're bringing everybody's beetles to your property, and they're going to stop to have lunch before they fly into the trap. So, you know, if you have lots of acreage, you know, you have 4 acres, and you can put the beetle trap at the back of your acreage, it's a great way to use it. But if you're putting it right in your garden, you know, you have a little half acre or something like that, and it's right there, very bad idea. So, yeah, don't use the traps. There's a couple other things that you can do, though, that that really do make a significant impact. A lot of people don't realize that when Japanese beetles first emerge, they usually emerge the same time every year. So if you record it on your calendar each year, you'll know when to start looking for them every year thereafter. What you want to do is when you see the first one or two emerge, that's when you start to treat right away. And hand picking is actually the easiest way to start right from the start. And here's why that's so important. When the first beetles emerge, they start to emit a different kind of pheromone. It's not the sex pheromone. It's what's called a feeding pheromone or a gregarious feeding pheromone. And they release this pheromone into the air. And what it is it's a signal to all the other emerging Japanese beetles that this is a good place to feed, because they like to feed in clumps and in groups. Then they feed and breed at the same time. So what they're doing is they're releasing this other pheromone. So when you get rid of those very initial ones that you see, you're cutting that out and saying you're not sending out that signal that your landscape is a good place to feed. So that's number one. Start early as soon as you see them. Number two is to protect any plants that you can with that floating row cover that I talked about with the previous caller. For me last year, they were all over my roses and they were all over my my blueberry bushes. And so what I did with the blueberry bushes is I just put that fabric over the top of them and I kept it on there for the entire rest of the season. The berries were able to ripen under there. I just removed it to harvest them, and the birds also couldn't get them as well. Now, you might not want to do that on your roses because obviously your roses are there for you to look at. So you can use a product control. One of my favorite organic product controls is one called Neem, and it's N as in Nancy, E-E-M as in mother. And this is a product that's made from the seeds of a tropically grown tree. And it works, I think, maybe on over 100 different pest insects. You know, compared to its chemical counterparts, it's fairly safe to use. You still obviously want to follow all the label instructions and be careful about applying it. Be careful about not applying it when there are honeybees around because it can affect them as well. But it's a product that works fairly well. And, again, it's using it early and often to try to prevent them from coming in droves to the landscape.
All right. Robin, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in as well at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We've got some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. You know, I wanted to go back a little bit on your background because in addition to your horticulture degree, Jessica, you have a lot of practical experience as the former owner of a, 25-acre organic market farm?
Yeah. I started in horticulture in a flower shop,
And then from there, I went to college and then started a perennial garden maintenance company in the city of Pittsburgh. And we took care of about 35 perennial gardens. And then when I was ready to move on after about 10 years of doing that, then we bought the farm, so to speak. And we ran that for a couple of years. And there was a lot of life lessons to be learned in that. And for a whole lot of different reasons, one of which included a long commute for my husband, we gave up the farm. We sold the farm and moved to a two-acre. We like to call it our suburban micro farm, where we are now. But we're not growing commercially anymore. We're just growing for ourselves.
And now, what do you grow on that 2 acres?
On our 2 acres, well, I have about my big thing is perennial gardens, and I'm a very cottage-style gardener. I kind of like a mishmash of free-form plants. There's kind of like organized chaos in there. So I have a lot of perennial beds, and then I have a nice big vegetable garden. We have a mini orchard where we have about 12 fruit trees. I'm going to get some more this year. I'm going to try pawpaws, which which I've never grown before, but I'm going to give it a shot and see how they go. And a lot of small fruits and, of course, pretty much every vegetable that you could think of. I do a lot of canning and processing in the summer, too. So, it's it's not a bad life.
No, it sounds like a great life. Well, I'll tell you what, lots of callers online. Let's go to Julie in Eau Claire next. Julie, hi.
Hi. I've got a question and then a comment. I'm about box elder bugs. At least I'm pretty sure they are. These red and black, long, slender insects that congregate on the garage wall like late summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed they're not all over my garden, but they were by like just 2-3 plants, and they would be on the ground just thick. And I'm wondering, should they be killed or left? Don't they do any damage? Or
okay.
Yeah. Box elder bugs, now I'm more of an expert on ones that directly affect our gardens, but I can tell you a little bit of experience that I've had personally with box elder bugs, and that is that I know that they're considered to be a fairly benign insect, which means they're not really good for the garden, but they're also not very bad for the garden. They feed on very specific species of plants, most of which are not ones that we commonly grow in our gardens. Where they become a pest is when they come into our house. And they will come in basically through, we used to find them in our door jamb around the front door at our old house, where they would come in and kind of overwinter. They're looking for shelter for the winter, and they would come in the autumn, and they would be there until the spring. You can squish them if they really bother you or suck them up in the vacuum cleaner, but if they're, not really bothersome to you, there's not really anything that you have to do. They're not really affecting your plants.
All right, so no problems there, Julie. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Matt in Waukesha. Matthew, hello to you.
Hello. I have a question about raspberry bushes.
Okay.
Now, I called a few weeks ago about grapes, and I forget who your guest was, but he told me something that the grapes, when they have a cold snap, that they may not come back. So that's well and good. Now I know what the reason is that, but I do have raspberry bushes. I wonder if that has the same effect on raspberry bushes.
Okay, red raspberries.
Yes, red raspberry bushes. When we do cut them back, and idea is that I don't know if we cut them back too far, because for the past 3 years, we haven't, the same amount of years that we haven't gotten grapes, we haven't gotten raspberries.
When you cut them back, how far are you cutting them back?
We leave about a foot and a half.
Okay, and are you cutting all of them? You're just blanket cutting them back down to a foot and a half?
Yes.
Every cane? Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, that could be part of the problem.
Yeah, that is part of the problem.
Yeah, you have to be a little more selective in your pruning with the red raspberries. And actually what's great is if you get the right varieties and you prune them properly, you can actually often get 2 harvests. Out of that same pattern.
2 or 3.
Yeah. So it's all about pruning them right. If you have a cane that has fruited, that one is not going to fruit anymore, and that cane can actually be cut all the way back down to the ground. I do all my pruning of my raspberries in the spring, actually. I don't do them in the fall. I do them in the spring. Anyone that has evidence of having fruited goes all the way back to the ground. Anyone in the spring that has not fruited, you actually can wait until the buds start to emerge off of the side of those canes. And those are the ones that you cut back to about a foot or a foot and a half.
Okay.
Those canes are going to be the ones that produce an early season crop. Okay. New canes that emerge from the ground will often, if it's the right variety, will often produce a second crop very late in the autumn.
Okay.
And then,
yep.
So you know, that pruning is very, very important to maximize the harvest. A lot of people will blanket cut them like that, but I actually don't think that's a smart idea. I don't think what you're doing then is you're keeping those canes that have already fruited in there, and they're taking up room and competing with the other canes when they actually don't have to be in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And watch about nitrogen fertilizer, by the way. Don't put too much nitrogen on there, or you're going to get a lot of green at the expense of fruit.
And no fruit. Yeah, or little
right.
fruit. All right. Thanks a lot.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Matthew. Randy in Spring Green, your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hi. So every year now for the last, 3 years, and I had never saw them before, we've got rose chafers. I've identified the bug, but they come out to the point where they're eating everything. They're like locusts. Is there any solution that I could possibly, you can't hand pick them. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
wow.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know,
they'll
it's
eat,
not a,
oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's not a real common that we will see them in droves like that, as you describe them. I don't have the product right here in front of me right now, but I believe that neem is labeled for them, NEEM, which I talked about with the previous caller regarding Japanese beetles. I believe that's labeled, but obviously you're going to want to read the label to make sure. Also, there is a product, and I'm trying to think if it's labeled for it as well. Another one to check out would be spinosad, which is S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, and it's actually a fermented bacterial product that is a really great product for the vegetable garden, but it also has lots of other applications as well. But it would be another one that I would suggest that you check out.
Well, would they be available in the Madison area?
Oh, sure.
Okay, like at Jung's or...
Should be.
Garden centers.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Good luck.
Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'll get you on pretty quickly here. We've got some open lines. We have Jane in Barron County, which is in northern Wisconsin, says, I'm going to gather wildflowers and ferns for a wedding reception in June. How can I deal with the inevitable wood ticks, which wouldn't look all that attractive crawling across the table?
I must say that's probably one of the most unusual questions that I have gotten in all radio interviews and radio shows that I've done over the years. That's a pretty good one.
Oh, man.
I wonder if you might just be able to, when you harvest them, obviously, you're going to want to carefully examine them, just do a visual examination of each stem as you harvest it, and obviously protect yourself when you go out into the woods as well, long pants, you know, tuck the bottoms of your pants into your socks and all that other good stuff. And I would also do a little shake on each one of them. When you make the bouquet, kind of hold it upside down.
Yeah.
And give a good couple shakes. Most plants, when we cut them, if they're harvested in the right stage, they're pretty darn tough. And, you know, you're not going to risk a lot of petal drop and things like that or breakage if you give them a few, you know, quick shakes to try to knock any insects off of there. But I think a visual examination is worth the time. Because
okay.
I agree, that would not be real great at a wedding.
No, you don't want ticks crawling around. No.
That would not be a good sign for the for that marriage.
Okay. And thanks a lot for calling. Jessica Wallace, our guest today, as we talk with her about those bugs in the garden. There's some beneficial bugs out there, lots of beneficial bugs and a few bad bugs. And her book, Good Bug, Bad Bug, covers 25 of the bad ones and, what is it, Jessica? 14 of the good ones. Jim Packard joining us again here as we talk about how you can make your contribution, your work for Wisconsin Public Radio and for Garden Talk. And, Jim, we have a goal of $9,000 for this hour. Where are we at now?
We're on the way. We have about $1,500 raised so far, so $7,500 to go to make that goal. We've got until 12:30 to do it, and all you have to do to make your pledge is either go to WPR.org or 888-202-202. 2552.
Every Friday, we devote this program to one of your favorite pastimes, gardening, and each week we hear from a different guest expert, and we dive right into your questions. Some guests are horticulture professors who can answer a wide variety of gardening questions. Others specializes in lawns or trees or fruits or vegetables or native plants, organic gardening, good and bad bugs like we're talking about today. And I hope if you listen regularly to Garden Talk, I hope you'll, even if you don't, if you like Garden Talk, I hope you'll support it, where you get so much great gardening information all year long with your pledge securely online at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
The main reason that you give to Wisconsin Public Radio is to support the programs that you enjoy and that you listen to on a regular basis. But as an added incentive for your good deed today, we have a special thank you gift this hour. Donate $120 or more, and you can receive the book Good Bug, Bad Bug. And it includes, Larry, some appendices which are important. There's organic product information. There is a source directory of organic products and beneficial insects and nematodes. And so that's additional information beyond just the introduction of those pests and beneficials in this very handy book that is going to be something that you're going to rely on in your gardening this spring.
And you know, when you mentioned those extra benefits, Jim, I started hearing the music in the background.
You should.
The Italian music, which tells me that it's time for us to talk about another great gift that we're offering here with every $1,200 contribution.
And that's Larry's Little Italy.
Yes, we're talking about Festa Minona at Larry's Little Italy, and that'll be June 27th, June 27th. Joy Cardine, Jim Packard, myself, Cheryl Gasser, Scott and Candy Craven. Scott, our regular wildlife ecology prof, will be with us for an event at our home. So for every $1,200 contribution, we will give you a pair of tickets to come to a dinner. And this year, it's an Italian dinner, Lombardino's Restaurant. Patrick O'Halloran, one of the great Italian restaurants, is going to make it for us. And we're going to have kind of a picnic outside. We'll look at Lake Minona and think of the Adriatic Sea.
Yes.
Where, you know, Italy is bound on that and on the Adriatic.
I think we can even get the gondolas to come out. And
well, my gondola has a 150 horsepower motor on it.
Oh, that's really good. It goes a lot
faster. We'll gondola
than the others
around Lake Minona if you'd like, but we'll have some great dinner, some great food, and we'll talk about that later on. But it's for a $1,200 contribution. We have 14 pairs of tickets left for that. So once those are gone, they're gone. So
that's
now's
right.
The time to contribute. Put in $1,200. We'll send you a copy of Jessica's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug, and we will also send you two tickets to come to Festa Minona at Larry's Little Italy.
You know, every dollar makes a difference to Wisconsin Public Radio. Every gift matters. $60 here, $120 there, an occasional $1,000 or $1,200 contribution or two. That's how it works. Individual donations from thousands of listeners, just like you, make up the largest share of our budget. There's strength in those numbers because when more people give to Wisconsin Public Radio, the future of the programming that you love is secure. So that's why your gift right now, no matter what the amount, is so important. So make your contribution securely online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And now's the time to do that. And now's the time also to call in for Jessica Walliser. Jessica is with us today. She's the author of Good Bug, Bad Bug, Who's Who, What They Do, and How to Manage Them Organically. It's a wonderful book. And as we've been talking about, you get a copy of that when you contribute $120 or more. But if you have a question for her, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And Jessica, we had a caller phone in and mention that using wildflowers for a wedding could be a good idea, but might not be a good idea if the flowers in question are protected species. So need to kind of watch for that, too.
You do, and you also need to watch on whose property you're picking from. You know, you need to have permission. if it's a you know, owned by the county or the government or something, that's a big no-no. So, you know, be careful where you pick them from.
Absolutely. And again, join us at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Of all the bugs that you've got in the book, there's 25 of the really bad ones. But when you think about it, I think most of the bugs out there are either benign or beneficial to our garden.
Yeah, it's actually less than 10% of all the insects that exist are considered to be pests. The remainder of them are either good somehow for our yards and gardens, or they totally have no influence or are benign, as you say. So it's a very small percentage of insects out there that are actually considered to be harmful, but yet we still have these little panic attacks when we see a pest in the garden. And, you know, it's kind of like this, our protection and nurturing mode kicks in that, oh my gosh, we have to protect our garden and protect our plants, when in a lot of cases, really just stepping back and keeping an eye on that pest for a while, instead of panicking and reaching for a spray can right away, you know, sometimes nature can figure out a way on her own to take care of it. And that's why those beneficial insects are so important to learn about and why they're important to recognize. Because if they are there, then you shouldn't step in. Because if you step in and spray something, you're going to kill the good guys in addition to killing the bad guys, which really upsets a very wonderful balance that exists in our gardens. So sometimes we gardeners have to learn to take a chill and just relax and step back and give Mother Nature some time.
And when we look at those bad bugs, is there one that's really the worst bad actor out there, or...
It depends on which gardener you talk to.
Yeah, I suppose.
I would say probably the two that I get the most questions about, no matter where I am, no matter what I'm speaking about, are the Japanese beetles, either as adults or as the grubs that feed on the roots of our turf grass and other ornamentals. So probably the Japanese beetles and squash bugs would be the second most common question that I get. And so I think those are the ones, and I think the reason that I get so many questions about them is because when they come out full force, and
yeah,
they're huge numbers, and they're also ones that happen to be very, very difficult to control, and really knowing how to control them from the start, from the time you very first see them, is the most critical with those two, because they're the ones that when the problem gets bad, it becomes more and more of a challenge to control them and keep them in check.
No, it sure does. One of the joys of my gardening last year was the rose that we had, the rose plant that we had, that early in the year, the Japanese beetles nailed it badly, and I just didn't get out there in time, and the flowers were gone. But we had a late bloom on that rose bush as well, and there were no Japanese beetles left. And so we had some, I thought, oh man, it's so nice to go out there and look at those roses without having to worry about the Japanese beetles.
Exactly. And that is one thankful thing, is that those adult beetles really are only active for about 30 to 45 days. And they can cause a pretty significant amount of damage in that short period of time, but you know that there's an end to the season. And actually, what's funny that you mentioned that you didn't do anything about it when you saw that infestation. I tell a funny little story in my first book, Grow Organic, where I had a client who had a very beautiful beech tree, a copper beech tree, and tussock moth caterpillars completely defoliated. At the top third of the tree, maybe even more than that, the top half of the tree completely defoliated. And they had, you know, a Joe Schmo landscaper, and they told him that they wanted to take the top of that tree was dead. So he chopped it right off. And I came next week to take care of the perennial garden, and I was like, what the heck happened here, you know? And it was dead, he said. And I said, no, it wasn't.
Oh.
A lot of times when we have, almost all the time, when we have these pest problems, they're cyclical, they're seasonal. It's very, very rare that a pest infestation will totally kill a plant. When we're talking about ornamentals in particular, they will often, especially perennials and trees and shrubs, they'll rebound the next season. And that pest is likely not to be as bad in subsequent seasons. Vegetable gardens, obviously, that's affecting our bottom line. It's cutting down on our grocery bills. So there we're more likely to step in faster with the pest problem.
Right.
But on ornamentals, so many times they kind of outgrow it. and they can get over it, and then they will go on to have beautiful blooms and lovely, lovely foliage the next year. So it's a hard lesson for beginner gardeners, but I think it's a really important one to point out.
David in Waterford, let's go to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I have a couple questions, and it's interesting you're just talking about the Japanese beetles. That was one of them. I think that's the name of the beetle. That's with the iridescent shell. Is that right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're quite prevalent. You probably know in Racine County this last year. And I'm thinking of raising honeybees this year. So I'm thinking I should not probably try and kill those beetles this year.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah. European honeybees is what you're going to try to do?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to be real careful with the products that you use. And, I mean, all gardeners should, whether they raise bees or not, be careful what products. Because anything that you put on your garden, conventional in particular, but also some of the natural controls, they not only affect what you're targeting, but they affect everything else around as well. If you are going to try to target those Japanese beetles, and this can be said of anybody, not just someone who wants to raise bees, but they are most vulnerable when they are grubs in the underground stage, because they can't move. They can't fly away from whatever it is that you're applying. That's when you really ought to target them.
When they're in the ground, yeah.
Yeah, as a grub, right. And there's two different organic products that you can use to attack grubs. The first one is called Milky Spore. And Milky Spore is a bacterial product that you apply to the lawn. They have a granular form that you use a drop spreader for. And then they also have like a powdered form. And that's really a lot of work because you have to put like a tablespoon every so many square feet and set out this grid, and it's a big pain. But the drop spreader stuff works much better. You have to use it according to label instructions. And when you do, it's effective because it's a living product. It's effective for 10 to 15 years. They guarantee it for 10 to 15 years. But it takes a couple of years to get established in the soil. So what you pair it with for 2 years is there's a couple different species of beneficial nematodes, and these are microscopic little worms that live in the soil that will attack the grubs of Japanese beetles. And these are another living thing, and they're either applied as a granular product or in a hose-end sprayer, and you spray it on your lawn, and they will also be very effective. And pairing those two together for 2 years until the Milky Spore totally kicks in, that's going to get you great control. Obviously, it's not going to stop the adult beetles from flying over from your neighbor's house.
No.
But it's going to help the lawn, and it's also going to help your population at your property as well.
Nematodes, okay.
Nematode, beneficial nematodes. And if you did your donation and you're getting your copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug, on the Japanese beetle page, you will see the specific species that work. And in the index in the back, there's a bunch of companies listed where you can purchase them from. If you can't find them locally, there's plenty of mail order sources, internet sources that you can get them from.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks,
Ray.
One other quick question. I have a raised garden, and I'm going to make it larger this year. Is there something you suggest for the boundary around the garden? I mean, right now I have treated wood there. I know that's not good. I'm wondering what kind of...
What could you put there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thankfully, wood treatment has changed over the past, maybe 5 years or so. They stopped using the arsenic.
Yeah.
Chromium copper arsenate is what they used to treat it with. Now they're using a different product. Mm-hmm. Still not the greatest thing. I still don't want to see you use treated wood if you have a choice, but it's not as bad as it used to be. It's not as worrisome as it used to be. I love cedar and redwood, which are naturally rot-resistant woods. They're not going to have as long of a lifespan as treated wood, but they're beautiful, and they still will
great.
Be longer than using pine or something like that. Rocks. You know, native rocks, whatever you can find or buy that are native to your area, it's going to be a nice native look, not concrete block or something like that, but you could use concrete block. I've even seen one of my favorite things that I saw was a person who built their raised beds with hay bales.
Sure.
And then what they did was they moved their raised garden around the yard every year, and that hay then got incorporated into the garden, that soil that they had added the compost and all the plant debris at the end of the season, and that became the compost pile. So it was kind of an interesting thing, and then they used that compost to build the next raised bed.
Cool idea. Jessica Walliser, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Jessica Walliser, our guest here on Garden Talk, as we visit with her about things to do in the garden, the good bugs and the bad bugs. In fact, that's the title of her book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. Jim Packer joining us again. to give us an update. Jim, how are we doing on our drive so far here?
We have a goal, Larry, as you know, of $9,000 to raise by 12:30. So far, we've got about $2,400 in hand, and we're looking for another $6,500 to make our goal. And you can help us make the goal and pick up a copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug with a $120 pledge to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
You know, chances are the Ideas Network has covered an issue that's close to you. We try to hit as many topics and issues as we can. Certainly every Friday here it's Garden Talk, and it's one of our most popular programs. But we also talk about medical issues. We talk about sometimes interpersonal relationships, finance. We try to bring you shows that you will find relevant, and I think WPR touches your life. So please make a pledge and help us out now. $120 pledge or more, and we'll send you a copy of Jessica's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. It's a great book to have. It's the size, Jim, is great because it, you know, take it out in the garden with you if you want, right out there to identify those insects. Wonderful full-color photographs with descriptions, how to spot damage, the plants they attack, and then how to control them organically.
Exactly. And Japanese beetle is found on page 22 with a beautiful picture of the mature Japanese beetle, quite attractive in colors, despite being such a destructive little character.
Yeah.
And in each of these, you're going to find a description of the pest, how to spot the damage that they're caused, the live biological controls, preventive actions that you can take, the kind of plants that are being attacked, and the organic product controls. So all of this is available in an easy-to-read format. It's got the pictures to make the identification, so you're certain of what you're doing. And that's available at the $120 level with a pledge. You can get Jessica Walliser's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. Call us at WPR. You can pledge now at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
You know, people often talk about the high quality of life that we have here in Wisconsin. We have great state parks. We have a renowned university system. We have wonderful public libraries and so many other great public services. And I think Wisconsin Public Radio is part of that high quality of life that we have here in the state. On Wisconsin Public Radio, I think we have some pretty lively discussions. We have some in-depth news. Great guests like Jessica Walliser here today on Garden Talk, who really provide a lot of great help and great information and really save us a lot of money, provide us with a better product here on Garden Talk. When we're, you know, when you're harvesting those vegetables or looking at those flowers this spring and summer, you've got some great information here on how to deal with the bugs, make them better, make your vegetables better and healthier, and make your flowers look better, all from this book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. And I hope you'll call in with a contribution of at least $120 and make it possible for us to reach our goal. We're at about $2,500 and about $6,000 to go. And, you know, there's also another something else that's going on out there, Jim Packard. I'm hearing
hear
that music.
Sound of the Italian music.
Yeah, what's going on with that now? Tell me all about that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Larry. When someone gives us a call with a $1,200 pledge, we will admit two people to a wonderful afternoon at your house on the 27th of June. And that day, they will find a wonderful Italian meal that will include chicken panzanella. This is roasted and hand-picked chicken with rustic croutons and arugula, pine nuts, and lemon rosemary vinaigrette. There's a wonderful wood-grilled beef tenderloin salad with crisp bacon, gorgonzola cheese, creamy horseradish. There's an avocado and watercress potato salad, a market green salad with peas, goat cheese, toasted almonds, and lemon vinaigrette, and a buttermilk panna cotta. And I know that that's an Italian dessert that's made by simmering together cream and milk and sugar and mixing this with gelatin, letting it cool until it's set. It's an Italian phrase which literally means cooked cream, panna cotta for dessert on the wonderful afternoon.
And we'll be outside looking at beautiful Lake Monona, thinking that it's almost like the Adriatic Sea,
that's true.
The shores of Italy. But, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. We have a great time every year. And I tell you what, when you make that contribution of $1,200, you're going to feel great. You're going to have a wonderful time on June 27th, and we'll all be there, and we'll be having a great time. So that's part of a $1,200 contribution. You could join Joanna and Nina. Garden Talk has helped me through 10 years of learning and growing as a gardener. This show is an invaluable resource to me, as it is to all gardeners in Wisconsin. Victoria in Cedarburg says it's a mother's lifeline. I love to listen to all the programs in the car. What about you? If you listen to Garden Talk and support, love the show, I know people who tune in specifically for Garden Talk on Friday, even though they might have a busy day. They try to find the time to tune in. It's great to put in a vote for Garden Talk as a good program and one that you want to keep hearing on Fridays. The way to do it is to vote with your pocketbook a bit at 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org. Our goal for this 90 minutes is $9,000. We're at about $6,000 to go, and we can make it with your help, with your contribution at 888-202-2552 or online at WPR.org.
14 new calls so far this hour, new callers, new members of Wisconsin Public Radio. They are so important because the more people who support Wisconsin Public Radio, the more stable our financial situation. So become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can pledge $60 or any amount that's comfortable. If you pledge at the $120 level, we'll be happy to send along a copy of Jessica's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. And you can do that at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Jessica will be right back with us to answer more questions after the news. Talking today with Jessica Walliser, with her degree in horticulture and a lot of experience in gardening, and also author of Good Bug, Bad Bug, Who's Who, What They Do, and How to Manage Them Organically, today on Garden Talk. So really pleased to have her with us. Certainly, if you have a question, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. And Roger in Madison's been waiting a while for a question. So Jessica, we're going to go to Roger here. Roger, hi.
Hi. Jessica, thank you very much for all the information you've been giving us. I have a question about post beetle borers. I've been using some of the punky wood that I wouldn't burn in my fireplace to put around my garden area and eventually work that into the soil. But my question is about post beetle borers. First of all, I don't know what they look like, but I know what they can do in a structure. Can you tell me what they look like, how to treat them, or what hazard they may have for other trees on my property?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you who to go to so that you can get the right kind of knowledge about that insect. That's not one that I normally deal with. Mm-hmm. So what I suggest that you do is contact your local cooperative extension agent. They're usually listed under the county government pages in the blue. They're usually the blue pages in the front of your phone book. There'll be a cooperative extension agency listed there. I would contact them, and what they will probably be able to do is give you some very specific and some very complete information about, you know, what you're going to have to look for if there's anything that you're going to have to worry about at all with it.
Yeah, and there are some treatments, some very benign treatments that you can apply to existing wood. I don't think they're much of a problem on other trees. So I think Jessica's giving you some good advice there, Roger. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Dolores in Kenosha, we go to you next. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hi. This is a wonderful program.
Thank you.
I first have a quick comment about the raised bed. We had a railroad tie 4x8 bed for years, and it all broke down. And I went to the recycled, well, the plastic lumber, because I figure if you're going to do recycling, it doesn't pay unless you buy a product that's made from it. But beyond that, with the Japanese beetles, it was interesting that the man called about the bees. I've seen what they've done on a plant here and there, and it's like one leaf or two leaves. And I've been very lucky down here in Kenosha. But I've heard, you know, they're coming. So I thought about, what should I do? My favorite thing is to take my little soapy cup and go out and harvest them and put them down the garbage disposal, which is very satisfying. But I went out there one morning because they usually come out. I have, well, about 8 feet from my Bonica shrub rose, which they show up beautifully on because it's such a pale pink, I've got a Russian sage. And from sun up to sundown, I have a variety of bees, from bumblebees to the little bitty ones. And I went out there one day to go and harvest the beetles. And the bees would come over and chase the beetles off the rose bush. And I thought, oh, I can't pass, because I wrote down, like, neem, and I wrote down what you put in the soil, and I thought, I can't possibly spray this around there.
Right. And that's very important. And neem is an organic product. It's safe for certified organic agriculture. But you do want to be very careful to read the label and make sure that you're only using it when bees are not actively foraging, which would be early in the morning or late in the evening. If you go out and you see those bees on those plants, that's not a time that you want to apply a product like neem. Now, the lawn things are totally fine to use. Both the beneficial nematodes and the milky spore, you can apply those in the middle of the afternoon, and you can go out and roll on the lawn right after you apply it, and it won't have, you won't have any problems at all. The recycled lumber that you had mentioned for the outside of the raised beds is a very good choice, and I do agree that completing that circle of recycling, of buying the products that are made of recycled plastics, are great. The only thing that I ask that you watch for and maybe do a little bit of research on is what type of recycled plastic that you're using, because some of them do leach some compounds and chemicals, and I believe it might even be phthalates that are leached into the soil with those recycled products. So you're going to want to be very careful. There's some actual botanic gardens across the country that are starting recycling programs where they're taking recycled nursery pots and the empty flats and things like that, and what they're doing is they're actually collecting them, and then they are constructing raised beds out of them and then selling them back to the gardeners. So it's something that you you might want to look and see if some local botanical institutions are interested in starting something like that, because that would be a really complete cycle and actually keeping all of that in the garden as well, which I thought was a pretty neat thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Dolores, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to get Paul in Grafton on. Paul, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Good. I had a situation this summer where I had a larvae that completely defoliated about half of the young aspen trees I have here on my lot. And I took pictures, sent them to Phil Pelletieri. He emailed back and said it was some type of a soft fly, but he didn't know which one, and said it really wasn't a pest. I shouldn't worry about it, to just hose off the aspen to get the rest of the larvae off, and then the trees could survive that. But and I know the trees can take 1 year of that, but my concern is, these sawfly probably left eggs behind, which I suspect are going to hatch next year. I don't want the aspen trees to be defoliated 2 years in a row, because that'll probably kill them,
mm-hmm.
I suspect. What do I do to protect the trees this summer?
Right. Yeah, this is... sawfly larvae are very, very interesting because they are very hard for people to identify properly, so I'm very glad that you went to the right person to get a proper ID, because a lot of people think that they're some kind of caterpillar, and then they use a product on them targeted towards caterpillars because they look very much like a caterpillar. And products like BT, which is a bacterial product, that is targeted specifically towards caterpillars. It won't do a darn thing for sawfly larvae. So that was really good that you got that proper ID first. First thing that I would recommend, if you have sawfly on any plant, including those aspens, are to encourage a lot of small birds to come into the landscape. Now, these birds are not going to totally control this huge infestation, but chickadees, wrens, a lot of other small birds, you can encourage them to come to the garden. They eat a huge amount of sawfly larvae, and they actually will make a dent in them. I don't necessarily agree with your statement that your assumption, I guess, that right. There's automatically going to be a huge population this year. That's not always the case. Sometimes in certain winters, more eggs are destroyed, and so on and so forth. When the sawfly larvae turn into adults, they scatter and they leave. So you're not automatically going to get a new population that's going to be just as bad. So I might ask you to step back first and not treat until you see that you definitely have a problem occurring. I want you to be on the lookout for it, because that's prevention is really going to make a difference. But at the same point, I don't want you to just blanket something on there as a just in case. But there are some organic product controls that are labeled for sawfly larvae that if you do discover you have the problem again this year, that spinosad product that I talked about with the other caller,
yep.
It's S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, terrific, terrific product, very safe to use, and it's labeled for sawfly, so that would be one I would look at. Many insecticidal soaps are labeled for sawfly larvae. They will work. Many horticultural oils are labeled for them as well. And also that neem, but that would be the kind of the last resort in this. I would turn to that spinosad first. I think that you're going to want to watch and actually see that they are a problem again this year, because they may not be.
Good luck. Thank you, Paul. Laura in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
I just had a terrible time last season with striped cucumber beetle and squash bugs on my pumpkins and squash. Is there a product I can use for both of them?
Yeah, you and everybody else had the same problem.
Yeah.
Really? So it was a bad year for everybody?
It was, and I actually really feel like it was across the whole country, too, because as I mentioned earlier, squash bugs are the biggest question that I get, no matter what part of the country I'm talking in. They're the ones that I always get. But let me talk about cucumber beetles first.
Okay.
The cucumber beetles really matter because they transmit bacterial wilt. And that will be, your cucumber plants look lovely and beautiful one day. The next day you step out into the garden and they're wilted and dead. And you think, golly, what did I do? Well, it's nothing you did. Well, in a way it is. But it's more the cucumber beetles that they transmit that bacterial wilt. So when you're planting your cucumbers this year, when you're choosing your varieties, number one is to look very specifically for a variety of cucumber that has natural resistance to bacterial wilt. That's your first thing. And there are lots of varieties out there, but you're going to want to look specifically for those.
What
other
about
thing is
squash, because those they attack mostly like the acorn, the spaghetti, the gourds.
The cucumber beetles were attacking those?
Yeah.
Or they were attacking your cucumber plants, or both?
No, more on the squash.
Most on the squash and pumpkins.
Okay, more on the squash and pumpkins. So you're going to, again, want to look for resistant varieties, resistant to cucumber beetles. Some of them have a natural resistance, even they don't taste as good as some other plants. They like that the compound that's in cucumbers that makes them bitter. That's what's attractive to them. So you're going to want to look for squash varieties that are resistant as well. That floating row cover that I talked about earlier, you can plant those plants underneath that floating row cover and allow them to grow and develop until they start to produce flowers. Obviously, you need to remove the row cover so that pollinators can come in and that you'll get fruit and you get pollination. But those cucumber beetles and the squash beetles, too, they do their most damage when the plants are young. So by protecting them with those row covers, you are helping with that and then removing them when the plant comes into flower. Cucumber beetles can be trapped. They're attracted to the color yellow. So you can get yellow sticky cards. They call them just yellow sticky cards. It's a heavy card stock that's coated in a non-drying glue. I've also seen people do it with, like, the yellow tape, like a crime scene tape. But they sell it like Peaceful Valley Farm Supply sells it, just for the garden. It doesn't say crime scene on it, but it's just a yellow tape like that. And again, it's over the tops of the plants. It's attached to stakes over the tops of the plants and coated in that non-drying glue. And that will attract them and trap them. Of course, it also does trap and attract some beneficial insects as well, so that's a risk that you take. There are product controls, the spinosad that I talked about earlier for cucumber beetles. That doesn't work for the squash bugs, but it does work for cucumber beetles. Neem is labeled for both of them. With the squash bugs, there's also another something you can do. And normally I'm not big on recommending, like, the little homemade things that you mix up in your kitchen and all that kind of stuff. But for the squash bugs, there's one trap thing like that that actually does work in my experience. And what it is it's 2 tablespoons of molasses.
Okay.
Just maybe a tablespoon or so of cider vinegar. And then a pint of water. and you shake that up in a, you know, a jar or whatever. You mix it up really, really well, and then you pour it in saucers or bowls so that the rims, their rims sit level with the soil surface, and you put it in underneath your squash plants like that, and it lures the squash bugs into there. They're very attracted to that mixture.
Oh, wow.
You have to change it a couple of times a week. It's kind of like the beer thing with slugs.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
And this is one that actually works. In my experience, that I've had good luck with it. Also, watch what you mulch with. Mulch with newspapers or mushroom manure instead of loose materials like straw and hay, because straw and hay give a shelter to squash bugs, and we want to eliminate that shelter. So when you mulch in the garden, mulch with newspaper or mushroom manure or compost or something like that instead.
Do you think, is this a cyclical thing? Do you think they'll be as bad this year, or
they're bad every year.
Okay.
I'd like to say they're one of the ones that are cyclical. They're not. And here's three varieties, by the way, of squash that are resistant to squash bugs. More resistant, anyway. They're not ever 100%. But butternut, blue hubbard, and royal acorn.
Those are three.
Are three that are known to be more resistant to the squash bugs.
Laura, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Well, Jim Packard joining me again here for a little push here toward the end of the program. Jessica, you're doing a wonderful job here talking about the garden and the good bugs and the bad bugs. And one of the good bugs here, Jim Packard, with us to give us an update. And, Jim, we're doing pretty well here. We've got a ways to go to reach our goal, but we're making progress.
We are indeed. $9,000 goal to be raised in the next 10 minutes. We have about $3,600 to go. So that means that about $5,400 is in, and we thank anybody who's made a pledge during the program. And we'll just ask you to make your decision right now to support the programs that you enjoy. If you're a regular and faithful Garden Talk listener, then why not make your pledge? And as an added incentive for your donation of $120, we'll give you a copy of Jessica's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. And if you've been listening during the program, you know that she's got a lot to say. And we're happy to have her as a guest and look forward to the book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. And you can give now at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
You know, if we only had about, 30 callers contributing $120,
we'd be right there.
We would be right there, Jim. I tell you what, if you have not contributed yet, this is really the time to do it. If you contribute $120 or more at 888-202-2552 or by going online to WPR.org, contribute now. Help us reach that goal of $9,000 for the program. You'll be supporting Garden Talk here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Every Friday, we bring you great information. I think we provide great radio through the whole year, through the whole week. But to provide great radio, we need to pay the bills, and we count on listeners like you to help. It's quick. It's easy. You'll be done in no time at all. Consider that contribution of $120 or more. That's $120 is about a buck or two a week. Not much there, a couple bucks a week to support Wisconsin Public Radio. But any amount helps us pay the bills. And we've had contributions of $60 or $120. Or, Jim, we could even have some $1,200 contributions as well.
Ah, the sound of Larry's Little Italy.
There it is, isn't it?
I can see the gondola pulling up to the shore and stepping off onto your pier and taking part in a wonderful, wonderful Italian afternoon meal. And so on the 27th of June at about 4:30 in the afternoon, that's what a few select people will be doing. And those select people will be couples who will have paid $1,200 for the privilege of attending the dinner, which includes chicken manzanilla. And I know, Larry, you'll be up all night helping out with that.
I tell you what, I don't have to do much on the cooking side because we've got the a famous chef, Patrick O'Halloran from Lombardino's Restaurant, who is known everywhere for his great Italian meals. And so I'm looking forward to that chicken panzanella. But I'm really looking forward to the conversation, too. Joy Cardine will be with us. You'll be there. Cheryl Gasser will have that delicious meal prepared by Patrick O'Halloran. Weather permitting, we'll do some boat rides maybe on Lake Monona if anybody's interested. Right at our home, my and Renee's home on Lake Monona. And we're limited to 15 pair, and so we've got gone through one. We've got 14 more to go. So make your call or at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org. June 27th, that's the day, and we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time. The conversation is outstanding. But if you don't want to come on June 20th, maybe you've got something else going on that day, why not contribute $120 and we'll send you a copy of Jessica's book, or even more if you can do it. Jessica's book, Good Bug, Bad Bug. Call us at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org and make your contribution. Jim, we're moving along here. Moving along.
Indeed. What have we got? We've got about $3,400 to go to make that goal. We've got a little more than 5 minutes to do it. So why not take this opportunity and make your pledge? You know, the Ideas Network is unique in the country. Few places have a network that is dedicated to homegrown call-in shows, just like yours. You may have found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion. You need to get somewhere, but this discussion is really interesting. And so there you sit, either in the driveway or you sit in the garage. You can't turn off the
car. I've done that.
I've done that, too. And it's always amazing to me when it happens. But you're appreciating the guest knowledge, the host knowledge, the caller's questions and views. Because it's happened to you, it's time to pledge your support. Show your pride in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Donate at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
And we've received 45 calls so far, 23 new contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio. That's wonderful.
That's a great ratio.
Oh, that's a great ratio. Barbara and Slinger called in with a contribution, says, I love the gardening show. She listens 8 to 10 hours a day to Wisconsin Public Radio, so she's on there a lot. But she zeroed in on Garden Talk because it's one of our most popular programs. And the great thing about Garden Talk is we've always had great support from you. You have contributed. Many gardeners have said, you know, I want to support this program. It's every Friday, 52 weeks a year. That's 52 programs. I don't know how many minutes is that. That'd be about 75. How many hours is that, Jim? I don't know. It's about 75 hours or so of great garden information. I know that many of the extension horticulture agents use the Garden Talk program for continuing education units for the master gardeners in the program. Love to see the master gardeners get involved in this too, and they've been very big supporters over the years. What about you? If you want to put a vote in for Garden Talk, boy, this would be the time to do it. 888-202-2552 is the number to call for that contribution. 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org.
And you may be wondering, how much should I give? Well, that's up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programming, programs that'll keep you informed and entertained all year long. So go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now and make your pledge in any amount. When you do, you're playing an essential part in funding the programs that you enjoy every day. So it's WPR.org or it's 888-202-2552 to make your pledge right now.
And some good news, Jim, we're past the $6,000 goal. So we're down under $3,000 to go to reach our goal. We can make it with your help and with your contribution here. We've got about a minute and a half to go before we go on to other things. So kind of it's your last opportunity to get a copy of Good Bug, Bad Bug, the book by Jessica Walliser, who is our guest today, who did a fabulous job talking about all kinds of things. We zeroed in on bugs quite a bit, but she answered some other questions as well. She's pretty typical of the kind of guests that we have on Garden Talk, people who know a lot and are willing to share and do it in a friendly, conversational way that even I can understand when we have these guests on. So now's the time. If you haven't contributed yet, please do it now. The number to call, 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org. I want to give a big thanks to everybody who's contributed so far. If you haven't contributed yet, pick up the phone right now in this last minute. Call 888-202-2552. And thanks a lot for listening and contributing.